Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said Apfelstrudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This episode of Nintendo Voice Chat is brought to you by Gamefly.
Here we go!
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, episode 378. Lots of great things happening out in Nintendo Switch land. It's just one problem. It is the calm before the storm. We don't have Mario yet, but we'll get it very soon. But we will be talking about the latest releases on the Nintendo Switch. We'll have a treasured guest on to talk about his adventures with Pokemon Go. And, of course, there's been a ton of news, Nintendo hardware sales, new system update. We'll be going through that as well. I will introduce our illustrious panel. We've got Andrew Goldfarb.
Treasured guest, Andrew Goldfarb.
Yeah, if you're wondering who the only person is who's still playing Pokemon Go every day, except for you.
There are literally thousands of us.
There are probably still millions of us.
There are dozens of us.
There are absolutely millions.
So we've got Andrew, of course, our news editor. We've got Brian Altano.
Non-treasured guest, but still happy to be here.
And you're not brapping anymore?
Brap.
Yeah, brap. Braps out. We've got Zachary Ryan.
I feel uncomfortable. I'm on this side.
Okay, well,
I know.
Welcome.
I'm on my behind.
I always felt the right side was your good side, though. You got just a little better, kind of little strip of gray there. Yeah, look at that.
Oh, you got the salt and pepper thing, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Per Schneider, and we'll kick it right off with the biggest news of the week, Switch sales.
Yeah.
At least. The Nintendo Switch passed 2 million units in the U.S.,
So pretty quick to 2 million units. Mm-hmm. It was the top-selling console, I think, 5 times out of 7 months.
Out of 7, yep.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we haven't heard global sales yet. Nintendo's quarterly report is actually coming up next week after you've already watched or listened to this episode. Mm-hmm. But they're well north of 5 million units worldwide as well.
Yeah. Yeah,
because
yeah,
and they were at like 4.7, I think, back in July, right?
Their momentum's really good. Yeah, that's exactly right. And on the that October 30th earnings report is their first half of the year, basically. So we'll get a lot of insight into how it's doing up to this point.
Yeah. Safe to say, it's a success.
So what do you think this means? I mean, do you think this means more third parties will take notice and maybe make more games? Or do you think this is what people expected and it's more of a story of watching how some of the games do now on the platform and then tossing support behind it?
I think it's that incredible thing where even if it was doing okay, it would look really good compared to the Wii U. But the fact that it's actually doing very well makes it even more impressive.
Yep.
And I think like third parties have to be paying attention to the momentum. Because they've had a major game every single month, and that's why
this
is working.
I think it's incredibly worth noting, too, that these were sales that happened predominantly or entirely in one region during a non-holiday season. I mean, this was basically spring through summer.
Yep.
In a sort of environment where there were supply constraints from literally day one. So this is still a success. I saw some people like on social media lamenting that this wasn't exactly like PS4 launch window numbers, but it's also like this wasn't the holiday season yet. You know, that sort of had the benefit of kicking off a console generation. And you could actually buy one of those for a long time.
Yeah, so my takeaway is like it is obvious it is not a Wii U.
Yes.
People are interested in this device and they're seeing the utility and they want it. I think, you know, the narrative that it's outselling the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One right now, it better. I mean, it better, right? Yeah. A new device that launched that is also sitting between the handheld and console audiences. At this point, it better outsell the consoles that have been on the market for a few years and that arguably haven't had the strongest releases. Uncharted, you know, Lost Legacy notwithstanding, but haven't seen the strongest and their kind of prime releases for a while.
Yeah.
But I think October and November are going to be really interesting to watch.
Yeah, it'll be a good battle. And I think that, like, we saw with the Wii U and pretty much every Nintendo console gets that loyal base that first year, right? The first 6 months, first 7 months. People like everyone at this table, people listening to the show, they go out, they buy the system no matter what happens, no matter what it says, no matter what games are there. And after that, the story changes, right? Sometimes it gets better, sometimes it gets worse. I think in this time specifically, sort of anecdotally, it feels like the first time we're seeing tons of people outside of just the usual suspects in line for these things, right? This is a system that is reaching people that have historically not bought a Nintendo console in a long time or primarily play their games on other platforms. I think this is transcending the usual base and reaching a much larger audience. So if they can maintain that momentum, which it seems like you're doing with this incredible first year of software, things will look good for a very long time.
Yeah, and you nailed it. They haven't had a Christmas yet.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the fact that there hasn't been a holiday season yet for this thing and it's already done this well is a very good sign.
Yeah.
There was the stat that Nintendo accounted for 2/3 of all hardware sold last month.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, of course, counting the 3DS, the Switch, and the Super NES Classic.
And the 2DS. Don't forget.
Yeah, like all
the new 2DS XL.
Well,
hey, just launched.
That's out there. That's right. So, you know, they're definitely dominating on the hardware sales side. Apples to oranges when you have devices at different price points, of course. Mm-hmm. Rabbids debuted pretty strong. Mario plus Rabbids was at number 7.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, definitely whether it's people hearing that the game was great or because of the Mario license, that game managed to get into the top 10, which, you know, that's not easy given some of the top sellers that have come out over the last couple of months and games like Grand Theft Auto, for example, just continuing to clean up on PlayStation and Xbox.
It's that weird thing where Rabbids launched towards the end of the month, so it has that weird disadvantage where it didn't have its first week sales counted towards September because it came out in end of August. So it probably did better than it looks like it did.
Yeah, and then Samus Returns on the 3DS was at number 8, so
which
that's
is
good.
Awesome.
You know, again, Metroid has never been a huge seller, especially worldwide. You know, obviously, Metro Prime games all are million sellers, but you know, it's not always been a shoe-in for that franchise. And Breath of the Wild was still at number 10.
Yep.
So that's the new Switch owners who just bought the Switch and are picking this game up.
With Kart at 11, which I thought was interesting, because Breath of the Wild is outselling Mario Kart, which we didn't really see the last few generations as a Zelda game outside of Mario Kart.
But maybe there are now people who had the Wii U and who are upgrading now, and they're saying, I already have Mario Kart, I don't need this, and we'll see. Well, they would probably have Zelda too.
I think Zelda is going to sort of bump in and out of the top 10 for a very long time to come.
Yeah, and it's also just, I mean, the reviews have to be helping. Like, it has to be a word of mouth situation where everyone being like, this is the greatest game ever, has to be helping it to some degree. Whereas Mario Kart, incredible definitive version of Mario Kart, but it's still, you know, a game that came out a year ago for some people.
Yeah, I think Breath of the Wild has that sort of that Minecraft GTA factor of your game is sort of defined by these insane moments and creativity and discovery of finding things and putting things together. And I think that is going to kind of delight people for many years. People trying to jump in for the first time. Mario Kart, it's sort of like it's a known quantity at this point. Zelda, different story. So we'll see.
Yep. Before we hit the next big topic, I just wanted to read a review from one of our fans. If you love the show, please leave a positive comment or review us on iTunes if you're listening to the audio version. I know it's a pain in the butt, but it helps us out. So this review comes from Shuba Looter. He just posted it. He gave us 4 out of 5 stars, and there's a reason for that, and I wanted to read that too. I really enjoy the show. I was recently able to find a Switch that I'm loving, and the input and opinions about games is very helpful in making purchase decisions. 2 minor complaints. These actually apply to all the IGN podcasts I listen to. Please stay in front of the microphone while speaking. Yes, we will. It's really annoying to try and listen to a show and have people fade away. 2, please find some way to stop the constant mic banging. Again, it makes it really hard to enjoy listening, watching IGN podcasts. Other than that, your show is great. Keep up the good work. Thank you. I think that's actually very constructive feedback, because as I was taking my meeting with the King of Germantown last week, was listening to the podcast. Wonderful job hosting, by the way.
Thank
you. It was a really enjoyable episode. But yeah, there was this noise the whole time, and I think we figured out it's been one of the mic arms hitting the table. Yeah,
yeah, it happened in GameScoop too. Yeah. You'll notice that there's coasters underneath. I can't believe we're talking about this. Coasters underneath these microphone stands, because we did notice that the mics were, as the table and weight shifted, the mics were banging into the table, which we couldn't hear in the room, but obviously got picked up in the microphone.
Yeah, we got a lot of theories in the comments. My favorite was that the board game Jumanji is buried underneath this table. And
We're very sorry, but hopefully it's fixed. If we're still making strange noises that are not emanating from our bodies in any way, please write us at nvc@ign.com and leave us a nice review on iTunes if you do enjoy the show. And Shuba Looter, if we fixed it, give us a 5-star. The other big story this week is it's kind of a headline that I think people blew out of proportion out there. Andrew, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's Sony Music Entertainment started a new publishing label, and they picked up a game called Tiny Metal that will be coming to PS4, PC, and Switch. And so I think people took that info and jumped to this incredible leap about Sony publishing games on Switch and how it was part of this new strategy.
PlayStation is going third party?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't think it's quite that intense. I think
sensationalist.
They just wanted sort of a quick, are you all right?
I just, you know, like, while you were talking, I just drank like this.
You spit water on that shirt?
He paired a spit take when he said Sony was doing third party.
Mm-hmm. That's right. But Tiny Metal was a game that was in development for the Switch already. We saw it actually at PAX, right? Yep. It was playable there. It is a take on Advance Wars. And so it is true. Sony is making games for Nintendo platform, for the Nintendo Switch, right?
Well, and again, Sony's publishing games being made for Nintendo. Again, this isn't like a first-party Sony game. It's not like you're getting Uncharted on Switch or anything crazy like that. This is just Sony kind of putting out its arms into the indie world and making a smaller label for maybe like slightly smaller tier games.
And they've been, you know, like Nintendo, Sony has been making moves in the mobile space before, right? And has published games outside their core PlayStation platforms. Obviously, Sony also under the Sony Ericsson label has done stuff on mobile before, has supported more platforms. I just thought it was really interesting. First of all, the fact that they picked this up and they didn't say, you know what, Tiny Metal, just Area 35, the developer, published Tiny Metal for the Switch outside of this umbrella. We will handle the other two versions. They didn't do that. They basically took it all on. And it is a really cool footnote in gaming that this has actually happened a couple of times before. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be fun to go over some of the examples of that. You know, obviously, way back when, Sony ImageSoft, you know, right up to the release, I think, of the PlayStation was a Super NES supporter. unfortunately making some of the worst games on the Super NES, but Sony Image Software, whenever
they were sabotaging it.
Yeah. But they, you know,
that deal went south.
How you take that competition out, you put bad games on the other system and then you launch that PlayStation.
But they did so even after they announced a split from Nintendo, right? Nintendo, Sony were collaborating on hardware before. They announced a split and they were still making the games like almost up to the release of the PlayStation. So there's one. But of course, the biggest Microsoft title possible is on Nintendo Switch and was on other Nintendo platforms, and that's Minecraft.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's one of those weird gaming history moments where a company buys a huge brand and it's just, you just can't dial it back, right?
Yeah, there was a Switch in the Microsoft press conference.
Exactly.
Right?
There was a Switch in the Microsoft press conference built in that Minecraft trailer. But even seeing on Nintendo.com under the publisher section, seeing Microsoft listed there is just so surreal to me.
It reminds me of when they ported Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo Nuts and Bolts, right? And then they also Banjo-Kazooie and also Conker have like idle animations where like they'll pull out a GBA or like a DS and you're like, hey, wrong system. Like, it's kind of cute. Like, I love seeing that stuff.
And it's obviously, I mean, Minecraft is such a phenomenon that I think it would be very difficult for Microsoft to say, guess what? It's Xbox and PC exclusive now. People would be really upset. And honestly, I mean, that thing just prints money. And so, you know, who wouldn't want to get a cut off, you know, the Sony or the Nintendo install bases out there? Microsoft, that's who. Because this is actually not new for them. What you describe has happened before. And I think part of the benefit in the past was always that Microsoft looked at the Xbox brand and looked at Nintendo's handhelds and said, handhelds are different. We're not a handheld maker.
Right.
Sony obviously had the Vita in the market. And so if you guys remember, why are you laughing?
Because I got excited when you said Vita.
Yeah.
Vita? Oh, do you still play your Vita, right?
Yeah, I played 40 hours of Danganronpa 3 in the past like month.
Okay.
And there's still Vita games coming.
Have you ever seen anybody else with a Vita on the bus? Or
I anything? Actually saw a Vita on the plane on Monday.
Like abandoned in the corner? Yeah.
No, yeah.
Somebody left their Vita here.
I saw a child playing a Vita.
All right. So Microsoft's non-Xbox products. Do you guys remember this one? Banjo-Kazooie, Grunty's Revenge.
Yeah. And there was Banjo-Pilot, too.
So that was... Right. That was
a top-down game, right?
Yeah, so that was actually made by Rare after they were part of Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And that game got published under THQ because Microsoft, you know, basically sub-licensed some of the titles that were in development to THQ.
Right.
So you had that one. You had Monster Truck Madness, which is also a Microsoft franchise. Tantalus made that. Oddworld Munch's Odyssey, Artco, Microsoft published it originally on the Xbox. And then, you know, obviously the franchise is now multi-platform. Saber Wolf from Rare.
Wow. Right, yeah. Which was them revitalizing their literal first IP. Mm-hmm.
Yep, back in 2004. And then 2005 was Banjo-Pilot.
Yeah, and there was a Viva Pinata too, right?
Yeah, the weird thing about these games is that they brought back the pre-rendered graphics that like they pioneered on Donkey Kong Country and stuff like that. Very weird.
But it's interesting, right? Like there's all this great code all these games were was working on and they were like, well, let's put them out and then, you know, let's put some of our developers to good use and really kind of benefit from the install base of the GBA through a third party. They also had It's Mr. Pants. Remember that one? Rare's weird inside joke came out at the time. Also via THQ on the DS in 2005, Zoo Tycoon. That's also a Microsoft franchise. Through Majesco, Age of Empires, The Age of Kings. Backbone actually made that one. Mech Assault Phantom War. Yeah, I mean, the Mech Assault franchise, I feel like, is due for a comeback.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny that we saw this on the DS. Zoo Tycoon 2 came out. Viva Pinata Pocket Paradise, a really late Rare game.
I forgot about Viva Pinata.
For the DS, in 2008.
That's so insane. Wow. I didn't realize there were so many of these.
Age of Empires Mythologies, Blue Dragon Plus in 2009, because that was Microsoft
who funded
the original one. This was a Brownie Brown game. Mm-hmm. Ignition published that in the US. In 2010, there was Blue Dragon Awakened Shadow.
Yeah, don't forget about the remix to Ignition, too.
True.
Yeah. And so I think it's safe to call it Microsoft's going third party. No, obviously this has happened before in the history, and one of the times that this happened, infamously, I was actually covering Nintendo, and that was Psygnosis. Do you guys remember the makers of Wipeout?
Mm-hmm.
So Psygnosis was owned by Sony, but wanted to be independent and branch out to other platforms, and so they started Wipeout 64. And I remember covering this and we're like, can we see this game? Can we see this game? And there was all this conflict. Like whenever somebody came in from Psygnosis, they're like, you can't tell Sony that you saw this because there was all this internal wrangling going on whether the game would actually come out. They also had a game called ODT, which we played but got canned, never saw the light of day.
Did Wipeout 64 eventually get it?
Yeah, Wipeout 64 came out through Midway. So they published it through Midway.
Interesting.
Sony Guess didn't what? Want to publish it.
It was not very good.
Really?
What? It was great. You're crazy. So it struggled with the N64.
It's really bad draw distance
build
for a
rate.
Racing
the
game.
The draw distance was really short.
Yeah.
The music was awesome. Well, it had a really good soundtrack. And it had, I mean, it remixed levels from previous games. It was enjoyable. And it was the first Wipeout with an analog stick. So.
Oh, yeah. That's actually a really good point. That?
So, this story has happened before, obviously, a couple of times. It's going to be interesting to see what Sony does under this new label. It's so funny that it's a soundtracks label.
Yeah, it's bizarre that it's separate. I think that's just because it's probably like a business thing for Japan. It's like a corporate structure thing.
Yeah.
My guess is that before they picked up Tiny Metal, those guys were already planning on all these different versions. And so Sony was just sort of caught in a tough spot. Like, okay, well, we have to publish this anyway. I can't really imagine that Sony would go out of their way to continue this sort of like third party development or like,
well, unless that's
like,
why they made a separate label. Like maybe they don't want Sony Computer Entertainment appearing on Switch, so they have this label for that. Or maybe it's just that, maybe this is literally just a publishing arm in terms of they're not really giving resources so much as like they're helping just distribute these games.
Yeah, because it's weird to have that conversation happening at the same time as them being like, we're not allowing crossplay.
Yeah, exactly. You know? That was like, where I was going to go next. Yeah, I feel like they're such an insular company when it comes to dealing with any sort of like other platform that it just doesn't make sense to me that they would go out of their way to figure out a loophole to get something like this on other platforms.
I mean, to me, it looks like they want to get behind indies, helping indies with with development and publishing, especially in the Japanese market. Because Tiny Metal is one of those rare, you know, kind of talked about indies that is actually coming from Japan. I mean, a lot of indies are from Europe, from the US, you know. Again, if you haven't paid attention to Tiny Metal, I think it will be the closest thing to an Advance Wars for quite a while. So it's quite fitting and kind of awesome that we see it on Switch. Thank you, Sony.
Yeah, thanks, Sony. Listen!
Hello there. Would you like to save money and play more video games? Well, let me introduce you to our sponsor, Gamefly. Gamefly is the best way to buy and rent all your favorite games. At Gamefly.com, you pick your favorite games and have them mailed directly to your door or mailbox. Gamefly is the leading video game rental service with over 9,000 titles to choose from. You can try your favorite games before you buy and keep the games as long as you want with no late fees. So if you're stuck on a boss fight or having a really good time, it's not a big deal. You can cancel at any time, and they also offer movie rentals too. Head to Gamefly.com/voicechat and start your free premium 30-day trial today. The premium trial allows you to check out 2 games and or movies at a time. You can only get this offer, again, by visiting Gamefly.com/voicechat. Now go sign up and start playing all your favorite games absolutely free for 30 days right now. Listen!
There's more news on the Switch side, the Redbox rentals. You guys hear about this?
Yep.
So what's going on with that?
So in select Redbox rental kiosks, which are those weird big red boxes you see like in the side of your grocery stores when you're there.
So it's not just a clever name.
No, it's a literal red box.
Oh, red box, those big green circles that you see.
They were sort of like historically for movie rental, and then over the last few years started adding more games, which I always thought was interesting because renting games is not really a thing you can do anymore.
Right.
Blockbuster is gone.
Gamefly.
Yeah.
It's Gamefly,
Yeah, and it's also like the idea of like renting a game that takes like 60 hours to beat and then having to return it every 2 or 3 days. There's something oddly nostalgic about that because I did that all the time in the 90s. So select cities are getting Switch games inside them. And some of those games include Mario and Rabbids, Pokemon, Lego Ninjago, and
Pokemon
more.
Meaning Pokken?
Yeah. I don't think they're doing any 3DS games or anything like that.
Yeah, I was like,
but it's interesting to think that like they're loaning you something that's like the size of a nickel and that you have to take very good care of and then return. Like Switch cases or Switch games specifically are not really the kind of thing I want to just go like throwing around with hundreds of people getting their hands on. I've also seen a lot of theft with those machines. People sign up with bootleg credit cards and then sell the games on eBay. So look out for that.
Yeah, I mean, if you do rent games, obviously there are no cloud saves yet on your Switch. So
right now those are in Seattle, San Antonio, and Portland, Oregon. So
yeah, there are a lot of scams where people will like use a Visa gift card to get into a Redbox machine, take the game out, and put in like a weird cardboard cutout of a disc, and then when someone else goes to rent it authentically,
why does it have to be a cardboard disc?
Yeah, there's nothing in there.
Why don't you put like a CD in there?
Well, I think it's so at first glance it like looks like there's something in it.
If you're interested in scamming Redbox, check out Andrew Goldfarb's video, yeah. How to Scam Redbox.
One of my friends always does this thing.
Wink, wink, wink.
For advice. Anyway, we talked earlier when we were playing a certain game. Somebody mentioned having to rent a certain game in that franchise from Blockbuster back in the day. And like, obviously back then, I said Switch doesn't have cloud saves. Of course, you don't have to worry about that with Redbox games. We'll get to cloud saves in a second as part of the system update. But people had to like really try and beat a game in like 2 days, and then when they brought back the cartridge, hope that they would be able to rent that same one again and get it back. And like, mom, make sure to get the one with the I licked it on the side.
I mean, I got to know the guys at Blockbuster well enough that I'd be like, please save this for me for 2 more days. Like, I'll be back.
Yeah. Thursday. And then some jackalope comes in and like deletes all the saves.
Yeah.
There was games that I rented so many times, and it didn't occur to me until I was probably like 12. It was like, I've rented these so many times that I could have just asked my parents for the money to buy it.
Like, well, that's like the weird logic with all of those things where you're like, well, I could spend $2 every 3 days, or I could spend $60 once. But the idea of having $60 once when you're 12 is impossible.
Yeah.
But $2, you know, that's in the couch.
Mm-hmm.
Craziness. So as always, a huge amount of Switch games came out to the point where only Brian can play them all. Like, it's just not
even close, man. There's just too many.
So we can't talk about all of them. And I think
Brian,
most
we can't
of you listening
talk about all of them.
I didn't or watching them. Here okay. would be really bored if we actually did talk to all of them, because there are a couple of titles coming through now that aren't, I'd say, cream of the crop too. And we'll you know, as we play them, if we see any of them, we'll definitely give you a little warning as well.
Yeah.
But just super fast, just in the next couple of days. Putty Pals, Elliot Quest. You played this on Wii U?
Yes. So this is it's very Zelda 2, but cartoony graphics, except the story is like very dark.
Mm-hmm.
But it plays a lot like Zelda 2. It's really fun.
So that's good. Yeah, you like that one.
It's $10. I totally recommend this game.
It plays a lot like Zelda 2?
Yeah.
It's probably not that fun then.
You don't like Zelda 2?
It's fine.
Got to get better at video games, Zach.
I don't like Zelda 2.
First, Wipeout hate, now this.
Solidarity.
There are only two people in the world, people that love Zelda 2 and people that hate Zelda 2. Okay. There's no one who's like, it's okay.
I thought it was
But okay. I love Elliot Quest.
There's a game called Jidge.
Yeah.
Sorry, did you are you okay? What happened?
Jidge.
Jidge.
Yeah.
Guess what happens when you Google Jidge? Google goes,
nothing good.
Did you mean judge? And you have to say no.
Judge if you're lucky.
Yeah. Exactly.
So Jidge, Party Golf, Revenant Saga, Spelunker Party. You guys talked a little bit about
that.
While I was in Germantown. Super Ping Pong Trick Shot.
Yeah, that's just a game about one move.
Yep,
it's crazy.
It. Yeah. It's a trick shot. The Count Lucanor, the Jackbox Party Pack 4. I know you love these games.
We were playing it at my desk the other day. Awesome new collection of mini games. Most of them are 3 players or more, so just a heads up before you dive in on this one, like, you need a small party setting. But we played one that's basically like Werewolf Within, but with sexting. So it's you and a bunch of friends trying to date other monsters.
Oh, yeah.
And it just gets really great because you're using your phone as a controller. And that's the cool thing about these games. So
that sounds cool because I've only dated monsters. So
yeah, that's
So this gets the Altano stamp of.
Oh yeah, I really like the Jackbox games, but some of the new ones here are really.
A lot
fun.
Of people kind of roll their eyes at the idea of like a you don't know Jack game, but you guys talked a lot about this particular Jackbox game on Beyond this week. So if you guys want to tune into Beyond, they have this like you don't spend a ton of time on it, but like it's a really nice breakdown of what those games are and what makes them so fun. Yep. So just check that out.
I think they work well on Switch too, because it's like the kind of thing you can bring your system everywhere, anywhere, and just, you know, carrying it on the roof.
Yeah. So the next game that's coming out is actually not so tiny, and that's Fire Emblem Warriors. And we would love to tell you more about it, but we didn't get it. Whatever happened, we don't know. Like, I think publications and YouTubers in Europe got their hands on the game. It didn't come out. We didn't get a heads up in the U.S., so we'll probably be able to give you impressions the week after next, because we might want to talk about Mario more next week.
Yeah, I mean, I played an hour of Warriors at PAX.
Yeah, and I played it at events as well.
It's good. I like the Dynasty Warriors games on portable. I think that's the one place where, like, if I'm going to play, I might want the time to play it.
Yep. Yeah, I think I'm with you on that.
This one is smart. The newer games are doing this smart thing where they try and incorporate very light elements from the series itself. So this has the weapon triangle. This has you can send troops to different forts, and like there's a very, very, very light strategy element to it that I appreciated. So,
and like you know, if you played Hyrule Warriors before, Hyrule Warriors had all these text prompts to kind of add that strategy element of coming to somebody's aid.
Yeah.
Whereas like this game has voice acting from the beginning to the end. So the other characters actually call for your help, so you get all these audio cues while playing as well. And then, I mean, for me, I'm going to play it because it's Fire Emblem.
Yeah.
I love
yeah.
that universe. I love the characters. I got my Tiki and Krom amiibo. I actually had them ordered from Japan. That's how I got them early, because I couldn't wait because I had to play Wars.
Well, they're just
their little figurines.
They're so smart with fan service because we all have our favorite Fire Emblem characters in games like this, and Heroes, and even Tokyo Barrage Sessions. Like, you get to see your favorite characters in a different setting. It's kind of fun and goofy.
And then there's, you know, with the different character types, you get obviously different different fighting styles, right? Like the horse, the horseback combat feels very different. You know, between, like, within the class, they all feel very much the same, but, you know, a sword fighter feels very, very different from an archer when you're playing. So you get a little bit of variety on that
yeah, and mobility. Which, like, there's verticality to it. Like, if you're on a Pegasus, you can go vertically up, like, above and crash down. Or, like, if you're on horseback, you can go very fast. There's, like, the archers have a range. Like, they mixed it up enough that it's at least more than just mashing a button, basically.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. I sat in on the demo that you were at PAX, and I was kind of surprised at how deep. Because to me, and I'm uninitiated in Musou games, but to me, those games are just button mashing through crowds. And it looked to me like you had there's a lot of strategy going on, sort of how you were planning to, like where you're coming from when you're attacking, where you're moving to next in terms of like the bigger battle. And also, I was surprised at how story driven it was. Like, I think you can't make a game with the words Fire Emblem on the front of it and not have like a at least halfway decent narrative.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of cool.
So far, the word is that the narrative is not quite halfway decent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, like, but we'll see. I mean, it looks like it's very simple. But I do think you'll be smiting a lot of
people. You think a lot of people will yell Krom? I feel like that's one of the tenets of that game.
I hope
just like a lot of people just yelling Krom.
Yeah, I mean, I think Hyrule Warriors is the best Zelda game of all time, so hopefully this
will
happen.
Oh, God.
Same.
Why for the record,
invite
very same.
Andrew back? That's just...
Yeah.
Very kidding.
So obviously that's a big one. Siberia is a really interesting release. It's a classic adventure game coming to the Switch. How many years late?
Very many.
I mean, this is a game like early 2000s, if you guys remember Siberia back then. We're not, you know, the PS4 was a twinkle in somebody's eye. This is generations ago. That's coming out on the 20th for $30, which I think is a lot of money for an old game, even though it got a little bit of a kick on the visual front.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look that old. Yeah.
And there's what, three of these games, and they're launching one every couple of weeks on the Switch? So you'll have the trilogy eventually, if that's what you're into?
Yeah, if you like kind of like the slower-paced, ponderous adventure games, you know, this is one of them.
Yeah, it looks really interesting.
I'd say there, especially with the Telltale series coming, I think there's some other options here. But you know, I'm looking forward to playing this. I'll give it a shot and see what it looks like. Just Dance 2018. I know you're dying to play this.
Well,
all my favorite songs.
The thing, wool. Well, the wool. It's made of wool, much like Yoshi himself. No, the interesting thing about Just Dance is that it's probably going to be the last ever physical Wii game. This is coming to Wii U.
Oh, yeah.
360.
Holy cow.
This is coming to Wii?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So because that game is still gangbusters on Wii, right?
Exactly. So there's like a decent chance this will be the last physical Wii game. I mean, we'll probably get one more Wii U game.
Just Dance 2019.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
But it's crazy seeing the Wii logo on something. Like, that means this is, what, 11 years after that system launched?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, these games always do tremendously well, and they're not... you know, they're not the most technical motion games, right? They take simple movement cues, but I'm sure Ubisoft let out a collective sigh of relief when they saw these little suckers. They're tiny. You can put them in your pocket. You can hold them in your hands. And so I'm curious to see how the motion tracking is on Just Dance, because it is definitely a step forward over the Wii U and, you know, a machine set exclusively used mobile phones as your motion detector.
Now, this is the first Just Dance game on the Switch. Right? 2017.
No, there was a launch one.
There was a launch one. Yeah. And that was the first game that we knew was officially coming to Switch.
That was the second after Sonic.
Right. So, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was when it was still NX, though. Yeah, that got announced at E3 2016 as a NX game.
Yeah, that's right.
Then there was Night Terrors, also out on the 24th with Just Dance. Wolverblade? You played a bunch of this?
Yeah, so let's
spin out for a week. So
this actually came out like a couple of weeks ago, two weeks ago, and we just kind of missed it.
Yeah,
I think there was just a deluge of games last week.
I think that's probably, like, speaking candidly, that'll probably happen.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many releases every week for the Switch that it's hard for us to keep up with everything.
I think the interesting thing about this one is that it seems like a lot of people kind of miss it. And I'm here to say you should go back and play this game because it's really, really, really good.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
The art direction is awesome. So basically this sounds funny, but it's a beat 'em up based on actual history. And that, I know that, like, evokes things like, you know, Genji 3, Massive Enemy Crab, you know, that kind of era. But
do you have like authentic blue picked face paint and stuff?
Basically,
like that,
yeah. So you can play this game like, you know, Double Dragon with swords and run around and beat up bad guys and cut them in half and pick up their arms and heads and throw them at other enemies. It's incredibly violent. The battlefield gets covered in blood as you play. You can play two players at once, which is really cool. But the interesting thing is that after you beat a level, you can watch a video, like drone footage, of the area in England where this battle actually took place historically, and then you get to see the cartoony version of it in the game. There's also like profiles on characters and on weapons that you find in the game, so all of that is optional. You can just dive in and be like, what is the history behind this sword?
Yep.
Or you can just be like, cool, I get to cut the guy's head off and throw his arm.
I mean, you can tell it's a passion project, right?
Definitely.
Where a developer really loves a certain aspect of history or loves a certain feature and then just goes nuts with a game, and I always love it when there's this extra information. Like, I'm playing Gran Turismo and it has all this car porn.
It's so
right?
Yeah,
it's like you can watch videos from like that Audi and Mercedes made about the history, and like I just love
about
that
the history,
extra,
or even about like the type of leather they use.
It's so exactly. It's I like I really like this because I feel like first of all, people are getting stupider. Second of all, supplemental content is usually something you have to dig up on your own, and people just don't do it. I'm guilty of it. I go home and I push a button on Netflix and it shows me a movie and I'm like, oh, that's good.
Here, dummy, watch this.
Is that why companies like Google are failing?
I think so. Yeah, okay. I mean, the idea of like giving you more information on something you know about is something you have to seek. And these guys have been working on this game for 5 years. It's called Wolverblade. It's really cool. I will say, though, it's very difficult. It's one of the tougher Switch games. It pushes back a lot. And then the checkpoints are not as liberal as I'd hoped. I hope there's an update because I'm getting my ass kicked in this game. Like, you'll die on a boss and it'll kick you back a little bit in the level. You have to play through a bunch, but get good, as they say.
So it's Switch's Cuphead, basically, where you have a challenging game, obviously more fighting than shooting and jumping for two players.
A lot more blood than Cuphead.
Cuphead is actually very violent.
Is it?
I don't know. I haven't played it.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Great.
My son and I are playing it, and it's...
is it violent? Is it bloody?
No, you just get very frustrated with each other.
Yeah, because you're like 1 second away from the end, and you die, and then you start all
over.
Yeah. And like one player can revive the other player. You've got this last-ditch effort to get somebody back.
So. Well, speaking of frustrating, I played a game this week that I sadly have to report to not buy.
Mario Odyssey.
They really dropped the ball this time around. I don't know what they're doing with that, man. No, it's called Don't Knock Twice. It's one of the first sort of first-person horror games on Switch. I know we've seen a bunch of those hit Steam over the last few years. I really had high hopes for this one, despite the fact that it's kind of loosely based on a horror movie that almost no one saw, that didn't get good reviews either. But this is a game where you sort of search a house for clues until you find out there was a murder and you have to resurrect a witch or something like that. It's confusing. But here's the problem with this game. The controls and the frame rate...
Why is that so funny to you?
The controls and the frame rate are very, very, very bad. Primarily, you walk around this house with a candle in one hand and an axe in the other, but every time you go to open the door, you'll accidentally drop the axe. Sometimes it'll fall through the floor. The frame rate chugs to like 5 frames, docked. It's very dark, even when you kick the brightness up. It's just not very fun. It's sort of just a trudge to get through this thing. And it's also a very short game, so... avoid this game. Hold out for better horror games. They're coming. We're getting Resident Evil in a little while. So.
Sounds terrifying to me. You're telling me that if you dropped an axe and it just phased through the floor, that you wouldn't be scared?
That is, would be a very scary thing to happen.
Insanity effects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You really liked Rogue Trooper Redux.
Ugh. No. Pass. So this is a 17-year-old game.
You haven't actually played it, have you?
To the Switch, no. But I've heard everybody talking about it on every goddamn podcast at IGN this week, and I don't understand why. And the game looks but apparently here it is for you to play. So go ahead, Pear. Tell us all about it.
Wow, so positive.
I think it's interesting. Okay. I think it's interesting that this type of game, we don't have a ton of like over the shoulder third person shooting.
Yeah, with like cover shooting
right.
mechanics
and all
that.
So I think that is interesting. Yep. I don't really understand why it's this game though. First of all, the character's name is Rogue, and then like when you heal, a little robot comes out of the man's helmet and like gives him a shock to heal him.
This is historically
accurate. It's a very early 2000s game. I mean, it came out in 2000, and it's just there are games that are ported to Switch that I'm like, great. That makes sense. Let's play that. And then there are games like this that come to Switch that I'm like, why? Who cares about this game?
Do you remember like a couple months ago on NVC, all we kept doing was looking right in the camera and being like, put everything on Switch.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
Careful
what you wish for. Yeah.
There it is.
I think you actually asked for
that.
Yeah, that's fine.
I think this game is fine. Yeah, it's a classic third-person shooter. I won't finish it. I won't play more than just the first few levels, which I played already. It's not specifically for me, I'm not really wild about the art direction. I mean, yeah. I'm not crazy about the movie Avatar, so blue people in general with guns is not, you know, not my favorite. But like, I also have no problem with it being on Switch. It's another option for somebody in a genre that's like not really here. So
apparently, that was only the PlayStation 4 version that I grabbed trailer.
They pretty much look the same.
That's okay. Yeah.
I do really quickly. We mentioned on the list, but Night Terrors. That's a game that Nicalis actually kind of surprise announced a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Right.
Which just looks charming. Like I really like them. They're the devs behind Binding of Isaac Rebirth. And I don't know, like this is something I think it's really cool seeing devs like that giving so much support to this system.
Yeah.
Like I'm excited to see more and more and more stuff from like known names.
The Nicolas stuff is pretty good. You guys talked about Tiny Barbarian.
We did. Yeah. Tiny Barbarian.
I mean, I think like we've been saying, they're not only doing a great job bringing games to Switch, but also what they're doing on the sort of physical packaging
package
side.
Stuff. Yeah.
It's really, really cool. Lots of cool like keychains and stickers and manuals.
Had a bunch of stuff in it.
I know.
There was one they're doing that has like a squishy slime with it.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it's awesome that somebody still takes that seriously. I grew up during the age when EOA Electronic Arts, remember that company? They used to make these giant PC game boxes with the developer's name on the front and all this extra stuff in it. And like, I yearn for those days.
Yeah.
Where boxes were so giant you needed to buy another house.
It's like Axis, NIS America, and Atlas are like the only other ones left to make collector's editions anymore.
Yeah. 3DS saw two new releases, Galaxy Blaster Code Red for $1.49. So it's a very cheap little eShop game for your 3DS.
That's the second weirdest pricing of the week. We skipped over this, but
the
Count Lucanor launch price is $13.49.
Yeah.
Great year.
Yeah.
Probably wasn't a great year.
The equally beautifully named Workle Worlds also
Worlds came out
for $10 on the 3DS. So a couple of games to play, which I feel like we should move on to some bigger things.
What are you guys playing this week? Worker Worlds and Jij.
I feel like you guys were lucky that you came out the week before Mario. Just saying.
I know.
I think people are going to be pretty busy with their Switches. Mario
Not too
plus
busy
Rabbids.
To play Jij.
Yep.
Mario plus Rabbids. If you're one of those folks who bought the season pass for the game when it came out, the first part is out now.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy it separately for $6.99. It's a new co-op campaign. It has five exclusive co-op maps, and they're I think per level, right? And then it's eight new ultra hard challenges.
Oh, good.
In
yeah.
each and world secret chapter.
This
so.
Is actually a lot like the Zelda season pass in that this is sort of the challenged version, and then there is a story thing coming later.
Yeah,
and I think that's the one that'll be exciting.
It's good to hear that this is what this update includes, because if there's one thing that I could say about Mario plus Rabbids, it just wasn't hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
So bring on the ultra hard
levels. Did you play
levels.
Some of the challenge stuff in Mario?
No.
It's literally
no.
impossible. I refuse to believe anyone.
I played through that entire game on baby mode, and
really?
I beat it by the skin of my teeth.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I went back to some of the challenges, and like I started to seek out the easy ones first because I felt like I needed that progression.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so mean.
They get really hard.
Yeah, there's one of the like bonus challenge things is like to escort Toad across the map.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like so hard. It's like so unbelievable.
Why is it always Toad?
There are a couple of Toad missions like that. But yeah, it can be, especially when there's a Chain Chomp involved. Things can get pretty tough with that guy.
But I loved that game. I mean, I beat that game. I did easy mode in like a couple stages, but I mostly did it on normal.
Couple?
And I love it. I can't wait for more.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier, you know, one of the games not running very well and actually struggling even in docked mode or in undocked. Actually, we're seeing more games struggle when they get an up-res for TV. I love to hear that the developers of Mantis Burn Racing, they promised 60 frames per second on the Switch in both modes, and they actually called it out saying they're optimizing it for docked and for handheld to run at 60. So that's
pretty rare.
That's an announcement. It's another game that's going to have cross-play. Four players, local split screen is going to run at 30 frames per second.
I don't know much about this game. What is this, a realistic racing game or no?
It's not.
It's called Mantis Burn Racing.
Yeah, correct.
So I assume it's kind of arcade.
The realistic racer is Gear Club.
Yes,
which I think we'll see very very soon.
Yeah,
that's coming out too. A couple of other announcements. A game called Splasher, almost like 2D side scroller. I kept thinking Splatoon because they use like paint guns.
It looks and stuff. The key art for it, which is the only thing that I've seen from this game, you're playing as like a character that's wearing like a raincoat, with like a pink hair, and then it's like Splasher, and it's like, wow, that is borderline copyright.
Have you seen it in motion?
No,
it's
like 2D Splatoon.
No, without being reductive, but there's a lot of those elements in there.
Really,
it's fun,
but it's more paper cut. It's more like Wolverblade. Like it has that kind of look with kind of assembled characters that look like little pieces of paper.
Yep,
you know, not purposely going for a paper look, but so that got announced and it's coming out right away, so you don't have to wait for it.
Yeah, I think it comes out in like 26. A week, right? Yeah, I'm totally down with that. I mean, it's the same day as Mario, but it's a 2D platformer, so.
And then Dead End Job got announced for a 2018 release for the Switch.
Dead End Job?
Yeah, there's I haven't played it, but why is that funny to you again?
Dead End Job got announced for me in December of 2014. Okay,
I got to think about these things I say to Zach. last time he laughed, it was because you mentioned The Witch.
No, it was the way that Brian described it. He was like, I don't know, there's like a murder and you got to resurrect a witch. It was fine.
So what happens if you're watching the show on IGN or on YouTube, what happens whenever they cut to the other camera and you can't see us, Zach will laugh about random things and look at me. So
yeah. He's a giggly boy.
He's a giggler. I like Zach.
Yeah. A giggler. He's a little giggler.
Yeah.
Doom,
a giggler.
Doom got a date.
Yeah,
finally.
November 10th.
Yeah.
Yep.
Crazy. Not,
poor man's been single for years.
He's been swiping right for two full years. Couldn't get a date, but now Doom has a date.
It's hard to find.
Doom has a date, and it has gameplay videos, which I've watched sort of a graphics comparison type of thing. It looks good.
And it has motion controls.
Yeah.
So you could do a punch.
Yeah, I might be able to do some
go around and just
thoughts.
Do a punch and everything.
Okay. This is a really like Doom, for people who don't know, is it's the core game on the cartridge, and then you can download some of the other like multiplayer features.
Yep. So the multiplayer is there, but the map editor is not.
Yes, yeah,
Snap Map is not. Yeah.
Yep.
But I mean, it's still incredible. This is on there. It's one of those things that was in development for so long, everyone assumed it would come out and be bad, and then it was one of the most fun games of last year.
Yeah,
so having another go, I'm super excited to replay
I think this is a perfect date for it, too, because it's right in a window where, like, well, I probably won't be finished with Mario, but I will have had a lot of Mario, and Doom is a short enough game that it'd be like a perfect palate cleanser.
I'm very surprised Bethesda wants it exactly a week before Skyrim, though. Like, that seems, I'm surprised they would put both of those so close.
Yeah, I was saying the same thing to Pear the other day. It feels odd that their sort of flagship launch titles for Switch, or big games for Switch, are 7 days apart.
Hey, so Bethesda did the same thing for The Evil Within 2 and
Wolfenstein. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're like 2 weeks apart from each other.
Well, I mean, it's so funny though. Like Skyrim, I feel like almost could have dropped in December when it's a little quieter. I mean, granted, we have Xenoblade, but like it would have been interesting to see that get like.
Right.
I don't think they want to put in like a massive RPG that's what 6 years old now up against a first party RPG.
With Xenoblade out, you want to keep them a little bit apart, but I also think Bethesda probably has pretty detailed demographic data on who bought their games before,
right. Mm-hmm.
And they may have looked at this and said, you know what, the overlap between these two audiences.
Wait, which of those games do you guys actually think is going to sell better, Xenoblade or Skyrim?
Skyrim.
I think the same thing. Yeah.
I mean, Xenoblade's pretty niche. I feel like.
Well,
you just
never know with Nintendo fans, though.
I'm surprised with Skyrim. They could have done it on November 11th, which is when it originally came out. It came out on 11/11/11.
So you are the only one who remembers that. That is the issue, though.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Fair.
Do you actually remember that, or did you stumble upon this?
Because no, I that was the year I started here. I started in July.
Sleeve, it's tattooed.
Yeah, my start date tattooed.
He throws a party for Skyrim.
No, I just remember because okay. that was one of the busiest days. Like this year, it's October 27th. In 2011, it was November 11th. There were like just a bunch of big games coming out that day.
When did Breath of the Wild come out?
March 3rd, 2017.
Yeah, March 3rd.
When did the Dreamcast come out?
9/9/99.
September 9th, 1999.
When did the PlayStation 4 come out?
November 2013. I know the day. November
23rd?
Yes.
2013?
What day did you catch all Pokemon in Pokemon Go?
I haven't yet.
Okay. We'll talk about that later. Mario Party, go look up the new trailer for Mario Party Top 100. You can see some of the challenging.
Switch. Me too. Yeah. I wish it was on Switch so bad.
Like, it just looks so cool. And like, I have such good memories of some of those, like, the N64 mini games. And I'm not going to play this on 3DS.
And I can't remember. I'm sorry if I've said this on the show before. The thing about playing Mario Party on a 3DS is some of those games require this motion, you know what I'm talking about? Like the palm to joystick, like circular motion. How are you going to do that on a 3DS?
I'm sure they optimize that, don't you think?
Yeah. You have to do the two-finger thing. It's not going to be
just on the screen itself. Yeah.
Hopefully. Yeah. Anyway, watch the trailer.
I think they pulled back on that after all those kids went to the hospital with Mario.
Remember how they had to issue gloves?
Yeah, send gloves out.
Yep.
That's right.
What a bunch of idiots.
Yeah. And the little white pixie dust that would form around analog sticks always was always really
that
good.
That was hand.
They also showed how the
human hand.
Just
ground hand.
That was not it. They also showed how Amiibo work. You know, you can use Goomba and Koopa Trooper to unlock these mini game packs, but you can also tap them for like 10 to 50 coin rewards. This is a
cheater.
Along with motion controls, I feel like that's one of the most persistent discussions in Nintendo fandom, right? Like there are a lot of people who say, I don't want to play a game with motion controls. I hate the motion aiming in Splatoon. It was funny when I picked up Rogue Trooper, I was trying to immediately aim with the by tilting the device. And obviously Mario comes out and you can play it any which way. You don't have to use motion controls if you don't want to. It gets a little easier actually play with motion controls. But like this whole kind of loot box discussion also spread into Nintendo Land as Amiibo basically being these kind of, you know, gating stuff behind DLC. In this case, the content being Amiibo, physical Amiibo.
Yeah, people were scared about that even when Metroid was coming, and people thought the hard mode was hidden behind Amiibo.
So it sounds like though Nintendo is kind of loosening up and being careful and just always saying like, oh, you can get to it faster if you do it this way.
Well, and that's why
instant gratification, right?
Amiibo are really controversial in speedruns too, because for Zelda, it's a complete game changer.
Yep.
Get the horse way faster.
Yeah,
I'm always fascinated to see how they incorporate Amiibo, especially into games like Mario coming up that use every Amiibo ever released, have been like Yoshi did it. Like every Amiibo has some kind of function.
Do you think you're going to scan every Amiibo in Mario just to see what it does?
Oh, of course you will.
Yes.
Every single one?
Yes.
All of them?
Yes.
Wow.
Unless there's like a pattern where, you know, it just... you only get coins and you don't care. Like, if you know, I'm not going to do that, but like, if there is a chance that some random ones unlock something,
Well, the cool thing is, Pear has that massive Amiibo shelf here at work, and with the Switch, you can just walk up to it and just pick
I was gonna say, do it, you think that you, is it like a yeah, exactly? You just rub your Switch against
because I remember on the Wii U having to like lug in the box of Amiibo and scan them one by one and then bring them out because my Wii U didn't work in the other room, and I had, it was a pain in the ass, miss you, baby.
So, also, final humongous news item is that the Detective Pikachu movie will start filming in January 2018. Yeah. So it's real. I thought this thing would get canned.
The rumors, the
this is my favorite news of the week. Yeah,
it will never happen. But the actors rumored to be attached are like Hugh Jackman, Ryan Reynolds, Ryan Gosling. I think is one of them. It's like all the biggest stars.
The Rock,
as the voice of The Rock, as the voice of Pikachu. Yeah.
Can you imagine if The Rock was the voice of Detective?
I can absolutely imagine.
I thought
imagine
Danny DeVito was supposed to do this.
That was the fan favorite. Yeah,
should have happened.
Also, just a reminder: we still don't have that game in the U.S. and only episode one came out in Japan. It's an episodic game.
Well, let them shoot the movie. It'll come out at the same time.
I agree, yeah.
Rob Letterman is directing it. You may have seen Shark Tale, the movie that was not Finding Nemo. And then, Goosebumps. That's probably a movie you love.
Oh, love it. No, I don't like it.
I've never seen it.
It's supposed to be cute. Jack Black is in it. Like,
popular with the kids,
never saw it.
I think
you were a kid once.
Never was.
Long time ago.
Yeah, it's crazy. That came out exactly like this.
Came out the womb looking just like this.
Yeah. Man.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
A handsome
young
man.
George Lucas.
A handsome man. Nintendo Switch, I hope you guys are all rocking it, got its first system update. So, you know, we are at...
It's a fourth system update.
Maybe I shouldn't show the screen. But we're at 4.0.0.
Mm-hmm.
And the system update, I wouldn't call it, you know, earth-shatteringly huge, but it was significant. It wasn't just a couple of fixes or shortcuts. It had a couple of significant features that they added.
Yeah.
So medium-sized, what do you guys think?
I had a very interesting reaction to this because the news... When it broke that this, you know, when they put the patch notes up online, I got really excited because the top two things are file transferring,
correct? Yes,
and headphone support. And we were just talking about
the headphone support was buried. They didn't actually announce
But like that was one of the things that started trickling out like later in the day. It was like, oh, you can finally use headphones, but. Because it's Nintendo, there was a caveat to both of those things. Like, yeah, you can transfer your save, but can you transfer it back? It also takes the save out of your Switch and puts it on another Switch.
Oh, right.
It doesn't duplicate it. It's not copying. And then also the headphones, it's not – you have to have a USB adapter. So it's like I have the Sony Gold headphones that have the USB Bluetooth adapter.
Oh, so those will work.
So those will work, but you have to buy a USB-C adapter.
Yeah, unless you – I mean,
so then you've got – then you've got the USB-C adapter and then the dongle for the Sony headphones.
Yeah.
So it's like then you've got this peg coming off of –
So no native Bluetooth support yet. But
I don't even know if it has Bluetooth. So I mean it must because of the Joy-Con.
Yeah, it has Bluetooth. Yeah.
Right, just but it's like – so but not for headphones.
But hold on. What you could do though is you can you need the USB-C adapter because obviously the Switch has a USB-C port, a smaller one, which I actually think is really cool when you're on the go. But you can plug in just a standard USB headset now into the base. So if you plug it into the base, you could use your
okay.
If you put your dongle in there, does it fit? I hope it fits. When you put it in there, you could be using your wireless headsets
Your
room.
This is an ignorant question, but do they sell hardwired USB-C?
Oh yeah, because all the new MacBooks take those. Yeah. So like all the new MacBooks, the only port on them is USB-C.
Yep.
It's not Thunderbolt. It's no.
It's
USB-C.
Literally only, it's so they make USB-C to USB, USB-C to Thunderbolt, USB-C to Lightning. Like they all.
Yep. So I could just buy ostensibly, I could just buy a pair of USB-C headphones and use them exclusively for my Switch.
You could, yes. Or
question
you
mark.
Could just use the very standard.
Yeah, but here's the rub.
Headphone port.
I also have an iPhone 7, so I have a Thunderbolt headset.
Oh, yeah.
So,
Yeah. Here's the thing. When you travel now, you just have 90 tails and ropes and yarns and cords. And
there has to be a better way.
Yeah, well, they can't agree. All those people need to go on like a fishing trip together and just nail down the format.
I'm hoping
Sorry
that'll
for banging
be
the table.
I think that'll be USB-C.
Here comes all the YouTube comments. Watch out.
5 years, that'll be USB-C.
Yeah. Don't, by the way, if you're listening to this and you think headphone means headset, don't get confused. You still can't use that connection to chat with people.
True. Yep.
You still have to use the app, of course, for your games. But
that's right. This show is still named, ironically, Nintendo Voice Chat.
So USB headphone support was part of it, but they snuck that one in, and so I think they didn't explicitly break it out because they didn't want you complaining about it.
Dang.
A small update. They did also an undocumented change was that they added more granularity to the playtime display. Remember, it used to say played for a little while, up to like 5 hours or something.
It said up to,
so now it'll say played for an hour, played for 2 hours. So they added the lower playtime displays onto it.
Honestly, it's such a nerdy thing to say. This is the feature that I'm most excited about.
Yeah.
Because I remember in the first days of Zelda, way back in March, texting people like, oh, I think I'm this many hours in. I feel like I'm this many hours in. And because it didn't, I think it was up to 10 hours before it started registering how many hours you'd actually played. And even then it was only in 5 hour increments. It was about 10 hours, about 15 hours. So yeah, I like to know, I think, sort of as a merit badge, but also sort of to be like, ooh, I played 25 hours of this already. I better slow down.
People were getting that specific number by going through the parental controls app, which for a while was really the only way to get that, you know, that level of actual
granularity
to be like, this is the number. Like you had to have a parental controls app, and I was always afraid I'd be like, did I just block myself out of playing my own game? Like, did I just dad myself?
What's your code? 1, 2, 3, 4 kids, all parents use that code.
Yeah, so that's cool.
Yeah, so but the big big update was system transfer. So it's not a login logout system.
Right.
You can't save your files in the cloud or anything. Your purchases are tied to a system, but you can now transfer an account.
I mean, anyone who owned a 3DS understands this concept, or who transferred a Wii U to a Switch even, but or I mean a Wii to a Wii U.
But in this case, what happened with me, so I had a Switch, and all my kids had accounts on my Switch, and they played games on it, and my daughter racked up like 100 hours in Splatoon 2, and then she got her own Switch for her birthday, and she had to start all over. So what you can now do is you take the sub account, you can transfer it with saves. So it for parents who are looking to buy another Switch, this is perfect.
Yeah, but for sure. I think it's just fascinating because people who have been part of the Nintendo ecosystem, I think, kind of understood this.
Yeah. Yeah.
People who came not having had a Nintendo console, like Dan Stapleton or someone who really suddenly came back into this world, totally are shocked this isn't like a cloud save system, and I think it's kind of hard to explain.
Well, you're still at the point where, like, if someone takes your Switch and walks away, your stuff's gone.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing I want fixed above all else is that I don't want to have to get on customer service and be like, it's me, I swear. you know, like, that's stupid.
Yeah, one of our listeners actually wrote the nvc@ign.com mailbox and said, you know, his Switch is broken, he had to send it in, and he's really annoyed to get that letter back from Nintendo that basically says you're screwed with your saves and all that, right?
The letter from Nintendo is just insult to injury at that point. His story was like incredibly disheartening, by the way. Just to see, it's like, okay, well, my thing is gone now. It's been stolen or whatever. Or I got lost in a flood or a fire. Now what? And they're like, sorry. You don't exist. Your save files are gone. They said we can recover.
This wasn't even
a
repair. This was a loss.
And it's really sad. I hope they get around to fixing that.
I feel like it is coming. It's just one by one. And speaking of one by one, they shipped this device with a capture button, and they said in the future you'd be able to capture video clips, but at launch you'd be able to snapshot pictures.
Which
and
I did a lot of. Yeah.
Here's the update in 4.0. The update is you now have a limited DVR function.
So right now you have 30 seconds. Kotaku UK published a report, Laura Kate Dale this morning, that supposedly the plan is to expand that they're trying to get all first-party games right now, then third-party games they want to bring in, like, you know, Rabbids, stuff like that. Once all devs are supporting 30 seconds, then they're going to roll out an hour, 2 hours, whatever. Or, I mean, sorry, a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
Yeah. Right. That's going to be interesting whether Nintendo is going to create a system where they claim those clips too, like they do on YouTube.
Yeah, seriously, yeah.
But if you haven't tried it yet, update your system, go into System Settings, Update. You also have to update the games, though. If they don't update by themselves, just, you know, hit the plus button on the menu while you're on them and force a software update, because Zelda, Mario Kart, Splatoon, ARMS, they already support this. Basically, when you're playing and you did something awesome, press and hold the button. If you just tap it, you'll take a screenshot. If you press and hold it, you'll get the last 30 seconds will be saved. It has a little icon in the top corner that says it's recording. So you don't have to hold it and do something. You hold it to activate the saving of the last 30 seconds. Not awesome for multiplayer.
Yeah.
Because, like, in Mario Kart, you might crash into a wall if you know, for a second you take your finger off to activate that. Maybe you can do, like, the reach thing. Oh, no, then you're going to
– I think that's
– Reach over and hit the button for him.
I think there's a name for that. Yeah. I think there's if you go through the replays, that's your best bet with something like that, right? When Mario Kart is replaying your best moments, that's when you start capturing.
Or I feel like in Zelda, if you do something cool, you can, for a second, say, you know what, I'm going to lose some energy.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this.
Yep.
And then before you share, you go into, in your share section, you can trim the clip.
Yeah, you can edit it a little bit. I wish / am sort of glad that this wasn't available when we were all playing through Breath of the Wild, because I feel like I would have posted, a bunch of photos on my Twitter account, and I feel like I would have posted a bunch of videos as well.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things. Like, I'm excited that this is coming out just in time for Mario. And I worry about spoilers, but there's also, I know that there's going to be things in that game that I'm going to want to show people, like, look at how crazy this is.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see, like, the speedrunning community jump on this.
Speedruns. I wish this had been out for the Zelda Master Trials, because I do think there are so many incredible moments where I, like, just barely beat an area that I would love to
share. Like, the idea of getting a moon that usually takes us 3 or 4 minutes and somebody jumps in and gets it in 30 seconds, this is what they're limited to.
Yep. I mean, this is
really cool.
Like, as new people get Zelda this fall, people do shrine skips, people are going to start to record really cool stuff with them.
Yeah,
I'm really excited.
So, I mean, obviously Mario also has the screen cap and the photo mode feature. I mean, this is kind of adding on top of that. I was happy with what they had, just the posing and the screenshot feature. And now you get something
and
cool on top.
For as much grief as people give Nintendo, this is a perfect example of when they get it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This totally understands how people use Twitter right now for games, and how the reason the PS4 share button has been so successful is because people want this. People want to go, holy crap, look at this kill I got. You know, and I think it's really cool to embrace
Or sometimes you just want to show off the graphics in a game, like a game like Horizon or Uncharted, you want to just say, holy crap, look at the vista in this, and just to be able to share that in motion is
I noticed cool. The quality varies depending on the games you're playing. Yeah. Mario Kart doesn't seem to do as well since it's such a quick moving game, but Zelda looks really gorgeous, so
To be improved, I think. There were also 12 new user icons, so you can, you know, pick like Mario and Zelda
I
stuff.
Immediately updated mine to the Goomba with the mustache.
Yeah, there's a T-Rex with a mustache and a hat, which is awesome. There's that weird Moai statue that looks like Guy Fieri.
I wanted to be Easter Island guy, but like, I think mine is just my me right now.
Mine has been my me. I have a dorky plan. I'm going to keep my mushroom icon until I'm done with it.
One last big thing is
my Goomba.
Pre-purchase and preload.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're worried about servers getting hammered for a big launch like Mario, you can actually preload and you'll be able to download the game before it's out. And then, you know, it unlocks when it's supposed to. So that's really good news, I think, too. And then one super quick thing. Mario Kart was also updated to version 1.3.0, and they fixed a horrible lingering bug with the blue shell where player number 2 gets hit by the blue shell.
I liked that.
Me too. I got really mad at this note.
Yeah.
Really? This is a legit strategy for me.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible.
Yeah, you got to screw over player 2 when you get that blue shell.
There's also a buff for players who trail far behind to get better items.
So that always
you trail, you're like, coin, you're like, come on.
Yeah, that always seemed odd to me because I felt like in older Mario Kart iterations that was just built in.
It used to be like you would get lightning if you were in last
or
place.
Or Bullet
like
Bill or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I felt like that was missing for sure.
So, Andrew, I referenced your obsession with Pokemon Go already, but I saw this. I mean, first of all, I asked Steve, where is Andrew? And Steve said, Andrew is in Austin.
You don't want to know.
Because he wants to catch a Pokemon.
It's called Vision Quest.
And I said, Steve, I hope we didn't pay for this.
Yeah,
we
did. Did we?
Yeah, we paid for it.
What happened? What are you doing?
This is a question we've been asking Andrew for months.
I'm a completionist in a lot of games. Like in Zelda, I've gotten every Korok seed. I have done every side quest. That's the way I play games. Pokemon Go is a game where the world map is the world map. It's the real world. And so there are Pokemon that are locked to specific regions. And to complete my Pokedex, I've been to Japan. I got the Japan exclusive Farfetch'd. I've been to Europe.
Coincidentally, you were there for work and coincidentally caught these Pokemon.
And so
he did not pitch us really hard to go for no reason.
And so the very last one I needed is it spawns in the tropics, and that includes the southernmost portion of the United States.
So the tropics. So we are enabling your addiction in a way.
Yeah. You could say that. Okay. Or you could say that you're excited to have someone embracing a game with millions of players that is keeping up with the community.
Where will it end? If there's like...
they're adding 130 new ones in like a month, so it's not going
to
end.
If there's like a ice Chiquita monster and you have to go to the North Pole, will you go?
He'll go.
Absolutely. I want to go to the North Pole anyway, but yeah, I would do that.
He won't just go, though. He'll like hoodwink you guys into sending him using some like backdoor, you know, he'll be like, oh, well, you know, we're doing a visual gallery of ice levels in games. And then obviously he's in Greenland. You know?
There's an independent games developers conference in Reykjavik that I need to attend.
It'll be like that movie Camp Nowhere where they fake summer camp for the whole summer.
Yeah.
He'll come back and be like, wow, what a trip that was. I did all these interviews and it's like, oh, yeah, it's me, a developer.
Hey, Steve, if you're listening to this, it's all authentic. No, I mean, so here's the thing, right? The real nuts and bolts of this is Pokemon Go is a game that was gigantic. Traffic-wise, I don't know if people know this, but it is one of the biggest games in IGN history. It outpaced E3 for us.
Accessing like Game Help and articles about Pokemon Go, it was freaking
humongous.
It was
a phenomenon. And I think now, like, kind of I almost did this to make a point, to be fair. Like, Pokemon Go, no, seriously, though, like, Pokemon Go has millions and millions and millions of players. It is still in the top 25, top 50 app store week to week. Even when there's nothing new, it's on the charts. But there's very little left to do in it. I think there's a lot of fatigue right now among the hardcore
players. Oh, is that why everybody else stopped playing?
But everybody else didn't stop playing. I think right now there is this community of players who are really engaged in this game, but they're looking for new content. And like Gen 3, they just announced this morning, Gen 3 is coming. We get 5 new ones starting tomorrow for the Halloween event. There'll be more in December, and they'll roll out all of them in 2018. But like the game needs more than just new Pokemon. And I think it's time for them to embrace a lot of the things that have been really successful in the main series games. Like,
Andrew,
make them proper RPGs.
That's all great. What did you do in Austin?
I went there to catch Corsola.
How did you catch Corsola?
We drove around the city for 5 hours. And
who's
we?
Who did you drag into this?
Blaine Gibson from Rooster Teeth, who did me the favor of driving around. Blaine's awesome. And thank you. He got really into it, too.
Thank you for taking care of Andrew.
Yeah, exactly. It was genuinely really – it kind of brought me back to why I loved the game in the first place. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that real-world feeling is cool. It's cool driving around and having that sense of, like – no other game does this. Like, we reached out to a bunch of local Pokemon Go players in Austin, and they gave us a bunch of tips, and we were going to the places they recommended where they've caught their Corsola.
It's a secret society, huh?
It feels like they probably
talk about us when we walk by.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah. Do you have, like, a word for non-Pokemon Go players? Like
losers? A muggle.
Yeah. Well, no, obviously, we're making fun of you, but it's pretty awesome that you've been – that. The game just kind of stayed with you and that you keep going back to it.
Yeah, and I mean, I love it. It's going to be interesting as we get into Gen 3, Gen 4, when it's Pokemon I have less of an attachment to. Like, for me, Red and Blue and Gold and Silver were my Pokemon game. Yeah. Like, those are the ones that really got me into it. As we get into Ruby, Sapphire, and Diamond and Pearl and stuff like that, I really have less of an attachment.
This is not about attachment. This is about compulsion. You're going to get them all because you have to get them all. You didn't have an attachment to all the Korok seeds. You just did it because it was there.
Andrew got all the Korok seeds before finishing the game.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I still haven't beaten Ganon. I'm like 200 and something hours.
You don't want it to end, do you?
No, I'm going
to
do it. I'm going to do it before Mario comes out.
I would never fall slave to an addiction.
Yeah, exactly.
And completion.
Would never
Tiki? I think it is important to point out. I think it's important to point out that yes, we give Andrew a lot of crap.
Yeah.
For playing Pokemon Go. And yes, a lot of commenters did because he wrote that article. But I feel the same way about, like, Andrew is part of a very small, very passionate group of people about a game that is very influential and very important. No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's like I kind of liken it to the same way that, like, when we were giving crap to a bunch of, like, hardcore Destiny players. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's like, we might have moved on from that game, but you see something in that game that isn't for everybody, and it's not necessarily, like, it might not be our cup of tea, but you love it, and you feel the need to, like, keep playing it and keep seeing what the game has to offer, and I think mm-hmm. that's awesome. I think it's cool that you conned your way into a trip to Austin, one of my favorite cities in the world.
What's so specifically insane about this, and I mean that in the best way possible, is that it is getting, it's not just, like, playing 600 hours of Destiny. Because that's something you could do at home. You could never leave the house. You'll never meet anyone. You are getting on airplanes and you're getting off. You're actually sometimes, as the airplane is taking off, staring at your phone.
Yeah. Well, but it's also like I get out.
Which is the funniest thing, by the way. You just see the scene,
It's also like I've walked over the course of 15 months. I've walked 1,300 miles, according to the tracking in the app.
Is that why you're so svelte?
2,200. Yeah, maybe. 2,200 kilometers. So, I mean, it's like this game, if nothing else, it's just an awesome fitness app.
Yeah, you're mm-hmm. just staying fit. Did you at least get some barbecue to counter that in Austin?
We got really good Mexican food. I didn't get barbecue.
Dude.
Did you queso?
So good.
Yeah, we get queso. Of course we get queso.
How do you feel about the news that the next Pokemon game will be the last 3DS Pokemon game?
I mean, thank God. Honestly, yeah. I'm excited for Ultra Sun and Moon. It is that, and then Persona Q2 eventually are probably the last games I will put real time into on my 3DS. Because I want to draw that line.
I'm surprised. I thought they would continue and maybe support both, but that's putting all the power behind the Switch.
And I think
maybe the phones.
I don't think Pokemon Company really has a B team. Like, I don't think Game Freak has they make their Mystery Dungeon, and there's like Magikarp Jump, and there's Pokemon Go, and there's these spinoffs. But when it comes to the core games, they don't mess around. Yep. And they want their A team on that Switch project. I think after Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, they want to go all in, and that's exciting.
Can you tell me what exactly you said when you were in Blaine's car and you finally caught Croissant or whatever her name is?
We caught it by the Capitol building, and I don't know, there's video of me catching it.
It's the same reaction that he probably caught when he caught Mr. Mime.
Yeah.
Last year after Gamescom, Andrew was rapidly approaching the limit to Pokemon that he could catch. Like, he mm-hmm. almost had all of them, and one of the last ones that he needed was Mr. Mime.
He was rapidly approaching the limit that his friends could
literally withstand
him walking around beautiful foreign countries doing this on his phone.
But it was great because Brian has a video, you should tweet this out by the way, of Andrew finally catching Mr. Mime in Amsterdam. And Andrew literally goes like this, like, here, let me see your phone. Here, he goes, he does this. He goes, I got him. And then put his phone away. It was okay.
So weird.
I was expecting, this is not the time you fell off the dock trying to catch him.
No, that's a whole different story.
Yeah. Okay. That was a good time.
So, awesome. We are quickly running out of time, so I wanted to get at least one question block question in from one of our fans out there. Zach, do you want to take this one? This is from the NVC at IGN.com email bag.
We alter between that and our Facebook group and our YouTube Twitter account. Twitter account. So you never know where we're going to look. But next time we're going to look elsewhere, not in the email inbox. So, you know, leave us some cool questions everywhere.
So this question comes from Daniel from New Zealand, who wrote a novel. He begins by saying, the release of Super Mario Odyssey is upon us and early impressions are overwhelmingly positive. Breath of the Wild proved to be a high watermark in adventure gaming, yada, yada, yada. So here's my question. Which type of gamer are you? A Mario person or a Zelda person? I want each panelist to reveal once and for all which series they value most. Note, the series you don't choose is wiped from the history of gaming forever.
Daniel from New Zealand, that is a horrible thing to say.
I'm so mad at this question.
A couple of days before the release of Mario, the Zelda franchise. My favorite gaming franchises of all time, favorite gaming series is the Zelda series. I mean, Ocarina of Time, Link to the Past, Breath of the Wild, Wind Waker, they're all at the top of my list of favorite games of all time. So I would not be able to do without them, but that's a really horrible thing to make me pick between that and Mario, which is so close I can taste it.
Yeah. God, this is so
Zelda
difficult.
Guy.
Yeah. For me, there's no – I don't think it is that hard of a question. Like, I'm a Zelda guy through and through. And I love – I've 100%ed every 3D Mario. Like, I love Mario games. And I'm going to play Odyssey and love it. But, like, I'm Zelda. I mean, I won't get into the time paradox stuff of if you remove Mario from history, there's probably no Zelda and there's probably no NES. But point being, Zelda is totally up my alley. Like, I love that feeling of exploration. Playing Link to the Past as a kid was – that felt so huge. Or like the first time you see Hyrule Field in Ocarina of Time, which now feels tiny, but at the time it was the most expansive, incredible feeling I'd ever gotten from a game.
I played Mario games for years before I played Ocarina of Time. Ocarina of Time was the first Zelda game that I played.
Right.
And I loved Mario games and anyone does, but playing Ocarina of Time for the first time was pivotal for me because that was when I finishing that game, I was like, I want to do this forever.
Yeah.
Like, that's when I knew, like, I want to work in gaming. I want to talk about games for the rest of my life. Like, this is something that I'm really, really passionate about. So, yeah, also Zelda for me.
You
yeah.
too?
This is incredibly difficult.
You usually disagree with us when we're all
I'm going to do it again.
Are you going to add a game to the list, a new game?
Yeah. No. That's why I choose Star Fox.
Yeah. I wish. The Zelda franchise is incredibly connected to my entire history in video gaming. I don't know. I can't picture video games without thinking about like solving a dungeon or beating a boss in Zelda or traveling across Hyrule Field for the first time. But Donkey Kong was the first video game I ever played. Mario jumping was the first thing I ever controlled with a controller. Hmm. Super Mario Brothers for the NES was the first Nintendo game I owned. Super Mario World at the Super Nintendo launch was one of the most opening that on Christmas was one of the most magical moments ever. Super Mario 64 was there for me at the N64 launch. Now Mario games and launches didn't really become synonymous with Nintendo platforms for a long time after that, but I specifically owe my entire career and my entire love for video games to Mario and Mario games. So as much as I love Zelda, if I had to wipe one out of existence forever, and I played hundreds of hours of Zelda on NES. I mean, I'm old school.
You played every year, right?
Yeah. That's
the
game.
Insane to watch Brian play the original.
Yeah,
Zelda.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I just know it. It's just.
Yeah. I mean, and speaking of Brian's love, one of my favorite videos you've ever done was from I guess what 2 years ago now, or a year ago, when they announced the NES Classic on Up at Noon. You ran through the 10 times you've already purchased Super Mario Brothers.
It was, I think, it was 12 at that point. Yeah, yeah. It was NES 13. Classic might have been the 12th or 13th time I purchased that game, and I can like legitimately tell you, you know, every single version, the Game Boy Color version, the NES version, the All Stars, a Virtual Console, finding it in Animal Crossing, like it's just been, it's my like it's like that, what's that Jim Carrey movie where you keep seeing the same number?
Number 23.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, 23, yeah. Exactly. So it's like that for me. It's so special to me. This is a heartbreaking question though, so I hate you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Mario.
Wow. And so Daniel actually had a second part to the question that was, when we sit down and we vote on Game of the Year, isn't the fact that Nintendo has these two presumably amazing games, right? All the word on the street on Super Mario, on Mario Odyssey, is that it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Daniel made the point that maybe this will split the vote.
within our editorial team.
We've been talking about that.
So, yeah.
But we're not quite as Machiavellian as that. It's not a Mario or Zelda question for a lot of us, because we actually employ a point system when we vote for the first time, and then we get together and we narrow down the pack and we have discussions.
I think there are years when a dark horse has won because of this, though. I think like it could
last year.
Yeah.
Last year, Overwatch won because we couldn't decide between The Witness and what was the second game?
I remember,
there was a second game that were like tied in a dead heat for a week or more, and then Overwatch came in from behind and was like, oh, yep.
And I
That's
Inside.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think that this year...
thank you, Dan.
You know, the thing with Overwatch was it's one of those things where a lot of people vote across the IGN office. It's not like it's like just 10 of us. And Overwatch was that game that just everyone, literally everyone had played at least that game.
Yeah.
And this year, that might be Destiny. There are a lot of people in the office who really, really, really are hardcore to Destiny who don't play Nintendo games. And
over my dead body does Destiny 2 Breath of the Wild.
You can't say that you haven't played it.
I don't need to.
I will be stunned if Breath of the Wild doesn't win at this point.
Me too.
Because there's so much support for it. But I do think splitting the votes is possible.
Yeah. Besides, everybody knows that if a game at IGN gets a perfect 10, it automatically wins Game of the Year.
I wish that hasn't happened.
Yeah. I do feel like in the past, like games like GTA got robbed. Like some games that I
well, you loved, were really upset last year about Uncharted.
There were some really strong releases. No, I mean I think Overwatch was a really worthy game, and I don't think it's as simple as what you're saying, that people were fighting over those two bones, and that's why the third one won. Like Overwatch had a crap ton of votes.
Overwatch was a lot of people's second place.
So it was,
and then when the other two first place.
So if you're talking about weighting those numbers, then
it gets tricky.
Yeah.
And but that's the system we employ. We do use a weighted system where we give points to games based on first, second, and third choice. And then we come together and we have a heated discussion. And we also try to avoid issues where, like what you said, like, oh, well, I didn't play Mario yet. It's like, well, sorry, you're not going to vote on this.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like I specifically exempt myself from like a lot of the sort of like PC strategy or like rhythm or sports games categories, because they're not my forte. But like as a podcast host, you hear me on the show, I play hundreds of games a year. I try to stay well-versed. But I'm voting also with people like to, you know, overemphasize what Andrew was saying. There are like video producers here and other people that work here that only play a handful of games a year, but they still deserve to have a voice. And so it's weird. Like it's games like Overwatch, it's games like Zelda that sort of like transcend that core out loudspoken group of like podcast hosts and personalities and those people and writers. And it's the kind of stuff that reaches the whole staff, and the zeitgeist stuff that was happening around Zelda, like those conversations.
Well, we're going to see the same thing.
I don't think we will see the same thing with Mario. Like, not to take anything away from Zelda. Zelda is incredible and I love that game, but I do think there was a little bit of novelty to the fact that you were playing it portable for the first time.
Yes.
And that novelty isn't there anymore for Mario. And so I do, like, it'll still be incredible, but I think that Zelda kind of had that edge in terms of the way you think of it as that first console experience on the go ever.
It also, there was conversations. What's your character wearing? You're going to see that in Mario too. But also, like, it's an open world game where we all went and walked in different directions. Yeah. And we were having water cooler conversations where I was just like, I'm over in this zone. You're over here. I fought this, like, ice Hinox. Like, I was like, what the hell is that? You know?
Yeah.
We're having weird ass talks.
I think there will be talk like that with Mario. But, like, Mario has to be damn good to unseat Zelda. I do think that a lot of outlets will come down on the side of Zelda, unless Mario Odyssey just is so surprisingly awesome. And hopefully you'll hear a little bit more about that next week when we actually get to play this game and get to discuss it at length. And by that time, I think our review should also be up, right?
The review goes up the 26th at 6 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Well, there you go. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of NVC. We hope you enjoyed the calm before the storm discussion, as one of the biggest games in Nintendo's entire catalog is about to hit the Nintendo Switch, one of their fastest selling consoles ever. So maybe good things will happen right there.
Good recap. So buy one now if you need one.
Yeah.
This is the week.
If you're still on the fence and you're like, I'm going to buy one for Mario eventually, it's like, November might be rough.
What percentage of our audience do you think is listening that doesn't own a Switch?
You would be surprised.
We get emails to NVC.
Sound off in the comments below.
We get emails to NVC all the time from people saying, can't wait to play this on the Switch.
Yeah, we've gotten emails on Beyond from people being like, I don't even own a PlayStation console. It's just these guys are goofy.
Yeah,
no, that's true. Yep. Where can people find you when you're not on this wonderful show?
They can find me on Twitter at ZachariasD. I also run the Nintendo Voice Chat Twitter account, which is at
at NVC Podcast. And also coming on Thursday, the 26th at 6 a.m., it's the triumphant return of Linked Together.
Ooh.
And we'll be playing Super Mario Odyssey.
Nice.
So tune awesome. In to Super Mario Super Weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, five episodes in a row,
yep.
kicking it off with a real
that's
banger.
For clarity, that's Zach and I playing that game with one Joy-Con in each hand, really just trying to make it work. I think I'm going to be controlling the jump legs this time.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do a switch.
Jump. And yet, so I'll be jumping camera? Is that... This is going to get...
Yeah, it's going
to
get...
This is going to be bad.
Yeah.
So make sure to watch it. Where can people find you, Andrew?
I'm Garfep on Twitter, which we're now joking stands for going all around finding every Pokemon. And speaking of Pokemon, as much as I joke about that trip, I did write a piece that's on the site now that's kind of about my little adventure, but also kind of about the state of the game and what they desperately need to fix for it to keep doing well.
That's it. Join us again next week on NVC when we all... get the thing.
Brian's agent Bizzle.
Goodbye.
Oh, you didn't say your name.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.